Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories.
Welcome to another episode of War Stories. I'm Tom.
I'm Chuck.
And we have fan favorite and one of my good buddies, James. What is up, dude? You are my favorite medic to come on this show because you always bring the pain.
Hey, y'all. Black Cloud Life.
That's right. For those of you who don't remember, James has brought us such gems as the lobster claw story, which is as infamous as the wood chipper story, possibly. And then the Menudo fountain was another one.
It was awesome. Gross.
Yeah, they were pretty good. How you been, man? You're doing well. See, James and I used to work under the same roof, and then we worked for the same company, but not under the same roof. And then we no longer work for the same company, and now we no longer live in the same state. So when I see you now, it's like, I got to catch up. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. I'm doing good. So just plugging along, got into a good union. So I'm doing all of the necessary steps to solidify my position in that.
So just pay your monthly dues and find out whose wheels need to be greased.
Exactly. And get all your certifications and pee in a cup.
Yes, right. That's right. So just remind everybody, because we haven't had you on in a while. It's been since we were doing this in person at John's house, which was quite a bit ago. Remind everybody what your background is. You're an Army veteran and former EMT medic.
Yeah, so I'm prior service Army. I was a 13 Bravo field artillery cannon crewman, and then I worked as an EMT in Los Angeles County and some of the roughest spots Los Angeles has to offer, and like Norwalk, Paramount, Bellflower, the south end of Compton, north end of Vernon, East Los, Florence.
So if you don't know LA, this is everywhere that there's been a riot.
Pretty much.
Except for downtown LA.
Yeah. If you have a lack of melanin and you walk through these areas, you're liable to get gunned down or stabbed.
Yep.
No joke. Like not even kidding.
Yeah.
Like Compton, Bell Gardens, all of it.
Yeah. It's very violent.
Down there, I didn't stop at red lights when I got off work. I would just run red lights, and I would get to the freeway, and I'd go home.
Right.
And stop me, because as soon as you stop at a red light, game over.
Carjacked.
So, funny story then. I guess it's my turn quickly to tell a story. It's not even my story, but I was talking to our chief at the time, who had been an old school copper. Like he was chief at department in Northern California, and he responded back when he was, you know, a motor cop to a 211 and was in a Con Air. I'm on the back of a police motor gun battle type chase with the 211 suspects. Like, so it was back in the days when you could do shit like that. Right. And so he told me that then he came to our department and, got put in charge. He was a detective sergeant put in charge of backgrounds, and there was a guy that wanted to lateral up to our department in Central California from LAPD. So he calls and, you know, makes the arrangements and stuff like that, and he tells the candidate, he goes, okay, so I'm going to go down to your division on such and such date and the division was it was either 77th or Southwest. The cop tells the lieutenant or the sergeant, and he goes, yeah, so fine, get off at this exit, but as soon as you get off the freeway, take your gun out, put it in your lap. And yeah. He goes, what? And he goes, yeah, when you get off the freeway to go to my division, take your gun out of the holster and put it in your lap, period.
And take your belt off.
And what?
And take your seatbelt off.
Yeah, for sure. So this is a no joke area, as a lot of the areas, I guess, we're saying where James worked.
Yeah.
You know what's crazy? That most of Los Angeles now, including the Valley, is fucking dangerous. Very, yeah. Very it's, dangerous.
It's maybe, like, I remember the Valley was like a place where you could still ride your bike for a mile or two.
Oh, yeah.
To your friend's house and not worry about a thing.
Yo, that was the place that
you would where you have like concealed carry. You have to illegally concealed carry everywhere you go here now. Just even right.
Yeah,
the Valley used to be a place where you could go and basically just kind of lay low, retire, have a nice, easy life, and all of a sudden it just ramped back up. I mean, it's bad now. All these chases and stuff going on down there. It's crazy.
Yeah,
messing with you, man. They're to blame. They pump everybody. And MS and MS 13 and Florencia 13. They pump everybody through the border. And there you go. That's
a ramp up the level of violence big time. Like they have to. So everybody has to respond by taking it to that level. So it's been a while since we've had you on, and I know you're going to regale us with another gem or two. So the floor is yours, James Madude. What is your story or stories?
Well, let's see. So you want to start with the funny or you want to start with the oh shit?
No, let's go with oh shit first and then we'll end on. I like ending on funny.
Me too.
Okay. So So the oh shit is, I'm going to put my notebook down because I remember this one. I see this fucking one in my dreams. So anyway,
you know what? So you know what I heard recently that I loved was that dreams are like the scariest moment of reality, but you can't shut your eyes.
Shit!
I was like, right, yeah. I didn't ever occur to me to the fact that like dreams are terrifying because you can't shut your eyes.
Yeah, unless you're a lucid dreamer, and then you can like go fly off and like snort some blow off some hooker tits or something.
Yeah, anyway, that was all. When you said you see this shit in your dreams, I was like, I just realized I hadn't shared that with you guys, that the concept of like, oh yeah, shit, you can't close, like, no matter what terrible thing is happening in your dreams, you can't shut your eyes to it.
So. Oh yeah, man, it's forced replay. So my partner and I were getting run all night on bullshit, like, you know. Grandma's been sick for 3 weeks, but they decided to call at like fucking 11 o'clock at night and held the wall with her for like 2 hours. And then we get released and we're posting and we're trying to get a nap and we get a call for a nosebleed. Like, fuck. So we go get this old lady that's got a nosebleed and we wind up stopping the bleed at her house and we're like, cool. Like, there's a 7-Eleven down the street. We're going to grab some snacks, and then there's a church right down the street from there, and we're going to scoot into the back of that church parking lot. We're going to catch some Z's. So we get our drinks, we get our snacks, we stash them in the center console, and we zip over to the church, and we find this nice little dark corner. We both piss in the bushes, jump back into the rig, and we're sitting there, and we're like, all right, man. We're not going to say the Q word because the radio is not chirping.
No, yeah.
Sleep. Yeah. So we both jump into the back, and my partner's on the gurney. I'm on the bench seat, and we were like just falling asleep. And then our unit number was Lincoln 2221, and we hear it come over the radio. Lincoln 2221. Oh, fuck. And... Lincoln 2221, like Lincoln 2221, call into 40s, and then they give you the, or whatever, I forget exactly what engine it was. But 40s is who we usually ram with. So we answer up, and they give us the Thomas book page, and we map it out and we figure it out, and they're like, okay, call into whatever and MCI. And we're like, oh, okay. So we've got a mass casualty incident. And it's off the 91 freeway. I forget exactly what exit, but it's right by this nightclub. And the Sprinter van had about 8 people in it. And it had barreled off of the freeway in like 180 degree circle on the off ramp, and had careened onto the sidewalk and mowed over a bunch of people on the sidewalk, and then slammed in
shit
into a giant light pole that was one of the ones you couldn't knock over. It was one of the ones that the big street lights hang onto.
Right.
But it was bolted into the cement with 3-inch bolts. You couldn't knock that thing over with a tank. So it mowed over a few people in front of this nightclub and then plowed into this pole. So we get up on scene and we're the first ones there, and we get out, and there's a guy wrapped underneath the rear axle of the van. There's a few people spattered across the wall, and then inside of the van, the driver was drunk and pregnant, and the
driver of the Sprinter van was drunk and pregnant.
Yeah, and nice. The engine block had come into the driver cabin and pressed up her stomach, and the steering wheel split her stomach open and spat her baby out onto the bottom rung of the steering wheel, the lower part right there. So,
man,
damn near about to be born baby, just dead as fuck, hanging over the steering wheel, driver DOA. And then, we just say, fuck it. And we close the front door. And, because at that point we're in triage status. So we go to the back.
First step is anything alive.
So I forget exactly what it is, but if they are breathing, and or if they're breathing but they're red tagged, you just open their airway and you leave them and you move on. So you go green, yellow, red. So if you see anybody who's red or black, which is dead, leave the dead. And then if you see anybody red, you just open their airway and you move on down the line. So we were in full triage mode. We didn't have any tags because, nobody has fucking tags. It looks great in class and everything like that, but nobody pulls the triage tags out of their fucking bag. So
not to mention the fact that, people can see those.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously.
And then shit's happening so fast that you're like, well, fuck, I'd rather just try to help people than go to my bag and try to pull.
I'm not worried about tags. I'm not worried about it's going to cause you more harm than good.
Basically, the way it works in the field is you get the walking wounded out, you tourniquet anybody who needs to be tourniqueted, and then you help everybody else after that. So we work our way back, and this guy that's just behind the driver's seat has bilateral femur fractures. And it looks like his legs have a basketball inside of them because he's severed his femoral arteries.
Oh, so his femoral's bleeding inside his thigh?
So his femurs broke and severed both of his femorals. So my partner hands me 2 tourniquets through the driver's side door because I had crawled into the back through a broken window to get in there. And I'm dropping a knee into this guy's hip and give me the tourniquet up, and I pull the tourniquet
on. He's still alive.
And then I move over, he's good. Besides obvious probable pelvic injuries, we can't pull traction on this guy, but we can at least save his upper half. You know what I mean? So then we move.
It's triage. This is army medicine. This is battlefield medicine.
Absolutely. So, I get the tourniquets on this guy, and I go to the back, and there's so behind the driver, there was 2, and then behind them, there was 2, and then behind them, there was 1. All of them were DOA because none of them had seatbelts on, and they all ate the seat in front of them and whiplashed, and they died. So I crawled back out of the window And at that point, police were on the scene. And so I told him, I was like, hey, we got one alive in there. I've got him tourniqueted. He needs to get dragged out. So the officers worked on getting him out of the van. And then I went underneath, or my partner was already underneath, like, trying to figure out if this guy tangled up in the axle was okay. And he was mowed. He was done. And then we moved on to the other patients in front of the nightclub, and we did everything we could for them. And then the officers had the guy that we tourniqueted out of the van at that point. So we threw him on our gurney and we scooted, because we had like four other units there that were doing that thing. So that's the last I heard about that incident. But we wound up saving that guy. Had the bilateral femur fracture.
How many people were, I guess, alive that had been injured in that whole thing?
I have no idea, man.
Damn.
So I know that there was one alive in the van, and then however many in front of the nightclub, or however many else they found. You know, I don't know if anybody got bounced across the street. I don't know if anybody got ejected. I don't know. I don't know.
So, and that's a hell of a thing to deal with too, is to show up and essentially pick up this carnage and take all of this human carnage in, and then take somebody to the hospital that has, you know, injuries that are either going to kill them or possibly cause them to have their legs amputated. But that either way, it's not going to be good, you know, and this is the one person you guys are trying to help keep alive. And then when you get them to the hospital, it's like, okay, on to the next thing.
So I don't know. I don't know. So like, I would like to know if what I did helped some people, but at the same time, it's like, you know, I ran a couple calls where the nurses would find me at the hospitals after I ran some other calls in there, like a couple weeks later, and they would tell me, be like, oh yeah, that person didn't make it. And then my partner and I would just be fucking crushed. It's like, damn. Like,
it's almost without, like, you'd rather not know.
Yeah. Like I'd rather not know. Like, my job ends at the door. Once I get them into an ER bed, like, that's on y'all.
Yeah.
But, you know, part of you wants to know that they made it, but part of you also doesn't want to know, because if they didn't make it, it's going to make you feel like shit, and it's going to make you question whether what you did or not even made a difference.
It's like Schrodinger's patient. You can, if you don't know if they're alive, you can always tell yourself they're alive, but if you know they're alive, then you also have to know the inverse, which is which one's died.
Exactly. Like, I have this reoccurring nightmare, and it's super fucked up. Like, I wake up and I'm in this like 30 by 30 concrete room, no doors, no windows, and just like a single shitty light bulb hanging on with one of those little bullshit little dog tag chain pull strings that turns it on, and I turn it on, and there's like every patient that I can remember laying down on their back, like perfectly straight, like supine. And there's Shadow Man in the corner, and he tells me that you can't go to sleep until you cut all their faces off. And I've got a box cutter, and I go through every patient, and at the end he says, okay, now you can't go to sleep until you pull your own face off. And I feel like my hands tear into my face, and I feel my skin pull off my face until I get about halfway through. And then I shoot up in bed, like, don't wake daddy. And
that's that recurring?
That happens at least twice a week.
Fuck, that's rough.
I've been going through, like, fucking years of therapy to try and fix this. Yeah. It's almost better not to know, because if I don't know, they're not there on the floor, you know?
Right.
You know, that must be tough for medics. You guys spend so much time and effort doing your job, trying to save everybody. I mean, that must be super tough. It really must be tough. I mean, when we're on scene,
everybody I run into, like family, mm-hmm. like I save them. Like they're my, and then when I can't save them, it fucking crushes me, which is why I had to leave the profession.
I get it.
Yeah. You know, if you can't, yeah, if you've lost the ability to bounce back from seeing that kind of stuff, it's time to get out. It's not, and it's not a bad thing. It's just knowing your limits. You did it. You already, just by doing the profession, you did more than a lot of other people will ever do.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I went on this auto pet one time where these two twin sisters parked across the street from their family, and they went to jaywalk across, and they just got fucking demolished by a drunk driver. I had never seen a body more broken than this poor fucking girl. And, you know, it was a double patient. And, you know, the one medic took the other and I took this one. And we were like, I went to do my assessment and man, it was like if you dropped a hard boiled egg on the fucking counter, like that's what the back of the fucking wall felt like. And like her arms were broken at like such crazy fucking different angles. And it fucked with me because she looked exactly like my wife. And shame here, but I couldn't fucking look at my wife naked for like 3 fucking months without thinking about this fucking girl because I had to strip her and flip her. And it was uncanny the resemblance. And that fucked with me hard. And it took me a minute to get over that.
Yeah.
I bet.
Well, and I would argue you're still getting over it with some of them dreams.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
So
both those girls didn't make it.
So I'm in a, I've been in training and stuff like that and like counseling and peer support and stuff like that for agencies. And every time we get together and we talk, it is like a big symposium with like hundreds and hundreds of people. They bring up experts and stuff like that. And I remember this one time, and it stuck with me, that there's a glass half full and half empty. And when your glass is half full, that's when you've had a lot. And a lot of the time it happens with and this is all cop stuff. So a lot of times motors and guys who work traffics, they get there faster than people who just work patrol and stuff like that, because they roll on a lot of auto accidents and things like that. And when they get to that half full point, that's when they start having a lot of problems. And then when they get to that full point of the glass is just overflowing, it's full. That's when most of them, you know, they're like, they call it. And, you know, it's good to know that. And when you get there and you're like, okay, I gotta call it because
you it know, spills out onto everything rough. Else.
It does.
That's a hard thing with first responders is recognizing burnout and how to treat it without losing your job. Because a bunch of EMTs that I worked with, man, like they got burned out and they would just turn into shitbags. They're like, ah, fuck you. They'd like talk shit to grandmas and be like, fuck you. You don't need to go to the fucking hospital. Like, we're not a fucking taxi service. And like, they'd be burned the fuck out. And it's like, you know, in these companies and these public entities need to do a better job at recognizing when their people in the field have become burned out and they need a break and they need that mental reset to be able to come back and do their job properly. Because when you get burned out, the last thing you need is dispatch grinding you into fucking dust on every shift you have until you finally fucking snap and either quit or do something fucking stupid.
Yeah. And you know what? I think it's going to be, I think more agencies will start adopting it, but there's a few agencies out there that have started noticing that type of stuff. And they've been really trying to work with the employees regarding, you know, burnout and things like that. But it's like when I was in the military knew PTSD was around, but didn't acknowledge it. And was almost like, oh, you have a problem if you're acting this way. And it,
when I was in, if you got help, you weren't getting fucking promoted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I ended up losing a buddy that way.
Yeah.
And it was rough. It was really rough. And I've talked about it before, and, you know, none of us knew, and we kind of knew, but we're like, oh, well, no, he's just a shitbag, you know, whatever. And then really, like, when you started to think about it, when you got out, you're like, fuck, he's not. That dude was, you start really looking back on it, the guy was actually a really, really solid dude, but had too much and didn't know how to handle it. And neither did the agency at that point, which was the military. They didn't know how to handle it. And basically they would just, you know, mark you crazy or whatever, or try to separate you out medically or whatever. And that's not good, you know? And I think there's some agencies out there that are starting to try to pioneer it and trying to work with their employees on, you know, when they're getting burnt out and coming up with, you know, support programs and things like that to talk and get help. And then if it gets too much, you know, you really, you know, you take some time off and you really get the help that you need and keep your job. But there's, and more agencies need to start getting on board with that, because the day and age we live in, we're seeing more and more violence, more and more carnage, more and more death than ever before, I think, in history. You know, and it's just, it, you know, I try to work with my guys on it and try to see, and really, when I see people struggling with things, try to talk to them. And, you know, I have a little bit more because I can offer assistance and I can grant certain things and get them time off and stuff like that. But far too many agencies kind of almost make you the black sheep and make you feel like something's wrong, when really you're dealing with something and nothing's wrong. You're a human. This is a normal.
Yeah. The only response. Thing that's wrong is they haven't gone through it yet. That's exactly why they don't understand. And there's an agency that I know of, a large agency that a buddy of mine works for. They have a unit that they examine. One of the things they do is if there's a particular law enforcement officer at their agency that has more than three shootings, right, they will immediately trigger an investigation, but not into the shootings themselves, into, hey, is this guy a shit magnet and he just ends up in the wrong place at the wrong time? Or is there an issue we need to look at with tactics and training? Or, you know, one guy, lots of people go their entire career without getting into a shooting, and this guy's been into three. Let's find out if that's a total coincidence or if there's something we need to worry about. That's a great program if used the right way, if used for the protection of that officer, and also used to make sure you don't have guys that are out, you know, that are a little too cavalier and maybe should have been screened out during the hiring process. I get all of that, but maybe we should expand that so that it can't be weaponized for somebody to try and make a case against you just because you've been in a bad situation three different times. But also,
because you don't want to crucify officers for just responding to calls and doing their job.
But to that same point, you need to expand it to make sure that some guy who hasn't just been through the ringer with some pretty gnarly calls isn't getting to the point where his cup runneth over, as Chuck said, and doesn't like pull him aside and be like, hey, you know, is everything okay? And not like we're taking your badge and your gun and sending you to a shrink because we think you're unstable kind of a way. Just like, you know, hey, you've been through a lot of shit right now. You know, I just want to make sure you're good. And if you're not, we can figure out how to fix it. You know, whether it's 6 months of a light duty assignment at the station working, you know, with detectives, or whether it's not responding, don't give that guy any traffic accidents for the next couple of months, or whatever it's going to be, you know. But it can't be stigmatized, it can't be weaponized, it can't be used to destroy people's careers. And unfortunately, because we have a flawed system, I think that's exactly what's going to end up happening a lot of times.
Yeah. And tell me this isn't fucked up. I know someone. They've been involved in three shootings. After their second one, they were like, "Oh, hey, you're good to come back tonight." And he's like, "I'd rather not." And they're like, "Okay, you're gonna come back." And there was a couple people that had to come back, and they ended up having to leave early because they just couldn't do it. And one of the coppers, was like, he had to go back and ends up getting into a use of force. And he's like, I'm done. I gotta go home and I gotta take a couple of days off. But you should see that in not just the person who's involved in pulling the trigger, but the persons who are directly involved, who maybe got shot at or in the middle of the shooting when it occurred, they need to have some time to decompress off if they come to work the next night or the next day, because that shit's not normal. It's not normal for a human to go through that. And you're going to need a couple days to relax, calm down, decompress, because even I had like two weeks off after my shooting. When I came back, I specifically asked for a couple days inside the station to just relax. My first day back in the field, there was a pursuit that I was involved in. And I got to tell you, my nerves were so jacked through the fucking roof that I was like, this is fucking ridiculous. I had to take the next hour or two, like, just, hey, I'm just going to be at the station. I'm not going to handle anything. I'm just going to be assign myself to something
and
just
sit there
and relax, because yeah. I literally couldn't, I was shaking. I was like,
an adrenaline dump.
Fucked. Yeah.
That makes total sense. Like the video you guys just posted on your Instagram of the Chicago officers. Like, you think those guys are going to be good to go in the field if somebody's not going to take their hands out of their pockets? They're just going to fucking dust them.
Fuck.
Right.
Yeah, they're going to have some, they're going to be rough for them. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Because, you know, him and his buddy just got fucking almost greased. And, you know, the next guy who won't take their hands out of their pockets, they're not going to take any chances, especially if both of them are riding a car together. They're just going to draw and they're going to mag dump, you know, fucking 36 rounds into the guy's fucking dome.
And here's what, you know, I mean, this is a weird conversation to even have, but I don't think people are saying that, oh, once a cop's in a shooting, he's used up, he's done, give him a pension and put him out to pasture. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's it at all. I think it's more like
to become a human again. I said, give him time with his family to become human again.
Right.
Decompress and realize that, holy shit, I made it. Time to get back to work. Like, as soon as they hit the it's time to get back to work phase, like, that's when they're ready. But like, there's no bureaucratic fucking convention or board or group of officers that can determine when that time is. It has to be up to the individual on when they're solid to come back.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and for all practical purposes, like if they could put a thing where if you get into shooting, you can have up to that full year off. And if you can't get back in a year, then you're done. And they could put a clock on it if they needed to, but something where somebody doesn't have to worry about you know, oh, I better get back or I'm going to be unpromotable. I better get back or I'm going to be ostracized as being a pussy. And that's more culture than anything. That's just going to be people accepting that, A, when you do get into shooting, it doesn't just, you know, regardless of what happens to the suspect, it still fucks the cops up. Like, yeah, you'll second guess yourself and for years and years and years and years and years in a lot of cases.
Because mm-hmm. So you're not in foreign country smoking bad guys. Like, you're in America policing Americans.
Right. And these are American citizens. These are everyday people just like you. They're not an existential, you know, threat on the other side of a battlefield in a trench trying to invade your country. It's not the same thing.
It's not. And that's what people don't realize, is that, like, they want to hold military ROE to Leo's. And it's like, that's far-fetched at best. Like, you can't apply military doctrine to American police work, because really we are the best armed civilian populace in the world. And, you know, you typically don't have to worry about legal law-abiding citizens that are firearms owners turning against law enforcement, right, which is why gun control doesn't work, because criminals don't give a shit about the law. Right. Even if they're not carry a weapon, they're going to carry a fucking weapon. And because they are so available here, and because you have so many people that are willing to turn a buck, you have a lot of bad guys with guns, and law enforcement strictly interacts with bad guys, and you can't hold them to the same standards that you hold everybody else to. Like, it's impossible. Like, just like the shooting in Chicago, like, take your hands out of your pockets. Like, in a normal everyday interaction, civilian to civilian, if somebody has their hands in their pockets, who gives a fuck? But if you're a Leo and you're asking somebody to take their hands out of their pockets and they say no, that automatically red flags, okay, this guy's probably a felony probationer. Okay, he's probably got a weapon on him that he's not supposed to have. He's probably got priors for drugs or weapons or assault, rape, or any, you know, name anything. You know, good guys don't carry guns and interact with the police and not put their hands out of their pocket.
You can totally tell James worked some rough areas with a lot of good cops, because he is, he says everything that, that we all say. Well, so there's a fun note here then that we can end with, because this is why we picked the funny 1 second.
Exactly. Cause we go all dreary and fucking dark, and then we end with a funny one.
Yeah. Let's go funny. Cause then it'll bring the mood up for the rest of the night.
Real quick, with something you said, Tom, with being ostracized for not coming back too fast after a shooting or anything, that doesn't just go for shootings. That stigma applies to officers who are injured on duty.
Yeah.
Because I can't tell you, like, I'm sitting at home right now with a fuck knee, where I just got, like, 4 days ago, I got a cortisone injection in the fucking knee because I have torn cartilage in my knee and damn near need a replacement of my fucking knee, because the cartilage is so gone. And I'm sitting here, I'm like, fuck, dude, I'm going to be unpromotable for the next couple of years, because they're going to think I'm going to go out again, or I'm not coming back. And we have like 6 spots open for promotion. I'm going to come back. It's going to be all fucking filled.
Right.
You're going to have all these rookies who are in spots that are coveted. It's just ridiculous. And so that, for major, or not even major, but most agencies out there, whether it be fire or police, guys to get involved in incidents where they get injured or they're out because of some sort of shooting or something, that constantly runs through their mind. And I gotta tell you, they'll use that shit against you.
Yeah.
Because they'd rather promote someone else who hasn't been involved in all that shit, when in fact they should be promoting people who have been involved in that shit, because they have the most information and knowledge to give out. And I can't tell you how many times, because we get yearly evaluations, that I'm a senior patrol officer that people look up to, and I'm like, well, okay, well, why am I not promoted? Why won't you guys give me stripes? No one has any words, you know? It's that stigma goes for everything. And it's just, it's bullshit. Yeah, but
exactly.
Let's end it with a funny one.
I was going to say, I had a buddy who got in an officer involved shooting, and he came back like 2 weeks, you know, whatever the internal investigation period was. And he came back and he was sitting in the briefing room while the captain was giving everybody their assignments for the patrol. And he walked in the door, and his lieutenant looks at him and he goes, "What's up, killer?" And he finished his shift and he quit and he transferred departments like the next fucking day. Mm. So it's wild how it shakes out for y'all.
Yeah.
No. Crazy. And the fact that somebody would think that that's acceptable is mind-boggling as well.
Mm-hmm.
They've probably never been involved in anything, so there you go.
Yeah, that's true too. All right, so let's now I really need
all to right
a funny one.
Wiggle fingers, let me set the stage. Once again, my partner and I's favorite sleeping spots, church parking lots, because we knew that most of the time Mexican gangsters aren't gonna fuck with us in church parking lots. So
they have some ethics about that, at least.
Yeah. So that's where we hide. We get a call for a health and welfare check at about 10 o'clock in the afternoon. It's about 3 hours into our shift. I'm like, all right, fuck it. So we respond, and we say we're responding. And we go there and we meet up with the deputy, and he's like, yeah, you know, we got a call from whoever in the family. We're going to check on this guy. And my buddy and I, or my partner and I, were trying to look through the windows, and we're like, man, these fucking windows are blacked out. What the fuck's going on? And the deputy was like, I have no idea. And so we jiggled the lock on the door, couldn't get the lock open. We checked on the mat, saw if we can see any fake rocks, couldn't see any fake rocks, checked the top of the door frame, couldn't find a key. So we called the family member and we said, hey, are you okay with us breaking in? And he said, yeah, break in. I'm like, all right, cool. So the deputy stepped back, and he was a big old meaty dude, and he just, bam, just knocked that door in first hit. And then we got hit with the sweet sour stench. And we're like, oh fuck. And we walked into the house, it was dark, like power had been cut, the water had been cut, there was shit everywhere. We're like, what the fuck is going on? And you know, we got the ammonia smell on our noses from the smell of cat piss, and we're like, oh, where are these fucking cats? Where is this fucking guy? And then we go into the living room, and it's like a horror movie scene. Like the TV's on with the buzz fly, white static, and we look into this lazy boy, and there's this morbidly obese guy, like a quarter way eaten by his like six fucking cats. And they're like, oh fuck. And we look back at the windows, and the windows weren't blacked out. It was fucking flies. And we're like, oh Jesus. And we look at the deputy and we give him the old EMT salute. We were like, have fun waiting for the coroner, guy. And we fucking ran back into the rig, and we landlined dispatch, and we were like, hey, this guy's fucking done. Like, are we good? And they're like, just hang out for a minute. And we're like, fuck, right. And so we left the poor fucking deputy inside, and we have worked with the guy for years. And he comes back out, and he's like, you assholes fucking left me in there. And I was like, hey, man, careful, this cat's bite. And and so he left the front door open, and all of these cats just scatter out of the front door. And just
let the suspects escape.
Let the suspect escape. And we like got a couple bio bags, and we like taped them together, and we gave them like, just fucking cover that fuck up. And we wrapped it around his, we like kind of like tucked it around his body, kind of like when your wife asked you to make the bed, and you just kind of like, yeah.
You kind of tuck it a little bit.
That's fucking gross.
We were all just sitting there on the curb, and I had smoked cigarettes at the time, so I was sitting up there smoking a cigarette, and my partner was like super healthy and smoked cigarettes, and the deputy was next to me tossing a horseshoe, and we were just sitting out there talking shit, and luckily we got cleared. And then he texted me later that day, and he said, hey man, it took 18 hours for the fucking coroner to show up, and I was stuck here the whole fucking time.
Doesn't surprise me. Wow. Doesn't surprise me. Really?
Well, the thing about LA County, man, is that there's so many unclaimed bodies and so many murders out here that the coroner, like, if grandma dies in your house and you call the coroner, guaranteed minimum 12 hours for the coroner to get out and take her body out. Guaranteed. Because there are so many homeless out here that are unclaimed that die every day that the LA County morgue is just backlogged like a motherfucker.
Mm-hmm. Damn.
They'll do burials. What is it? Like every 3 months they'll do mass graves with unclaimed bodies. I forget exactly what it is. But you'll see them out in like what do you call them? Funeral home or cemetery areas or whatever. I don't know. But you'll see them out there with fucking like skips and backhoes, and they'll just dig a mass grave and they'll put everybody in a cardboard box and fucking huff them in and bury them.
When was that?
Boop, 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 and you're done. 2000. Let's see. 2016, 2015.
Okay.
Wow.
So my uncle ended up dying the same way.
Okay.
Fucking same shit. I don't know if there were cats involved, but
is that why he had such a visceral reaction to the talk about the cats?
So he died in his fucking Lazy Boy, and he was severely obese.
Okay.
He was an old vet from I think it was Vietnam, Agent Orange.
Okay.
And
I'm surprised you have two eyes, guy.
Yeah. So he fucking was, now that I look back on it, he was a drug addict. I mean, he was addicted to morphine. He ended up ODing from what the VA gave him. They gave him morphine patches. That motherfucker slapped on a bunch, drank some Diet Coke, and died in his fucking Lazy Boy. And it was so bad that the flies got so bad that it actually killed his AC unit in the window.
Holy shit.
And there was maggots falling out of it. Yeah. Oh. And I had to go in and ID the body with my dad.
Oof. Your dad took you with him to go ID the body?
Yeah. My dad's a cop, dude.
That's
I got
crazy.
Broken into that shit young.
How old were you?
I was in high school, I think. So gross. Well, I mean, oh man, that smell walking in that front door. I was like,
ooh. Yeah, man.
Oh, you went to the scene?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you went to the morgue.
We went twice. So we went to the morgue, ID'd, and we're like, that's him. We went back to the house to claim personal effects. And I'm like, you don't want anything in this fucking thing. They cracked that door open. I was like, I'm good.
Nope.
Fuck that. No.
Burn it. Burn it with fire.
I walked in. I was like, I was like, I'm good. I was like, I don't want anything from this place. Burn it. I don't demolish the fucking house.
Just burn it.
I have this weird thing, like, where, like, when I go to a funeral or something, if there's an open casket, I always look. And then if it's a closed casket, I'm like, damn it. Like, it's not that I want to see dead bodies. That's my way of, like, psychological closure, is to actually see them dead. But
I'm with you. Open casket, I'll touch the chest.
Oh no,
just to make sure. poke them with a stick pin, like a mobster.
Maybe it's in my DNA. I don't know. But open casket, I always pat the chest. Pat, and then walk away.
Well, I always like the open casket. It makes me feel better. I don't want to be buried now anymore. I'd rather just be cremated at this point. But you know, as far as like that goes, I'm fine with it. But when you see them in the dead bodies in the wild, is a totally other thing than dead bodies at a funeral home. So it's you can great when they're out in the wild. It's like an animal encounter. You know, there's like seeing a squirrel in your backyard, and then there's like a bear chasing you down a mountain. You know, so there's that range of dead bodies. There's grandma who passed in her sleep, and you get there first thing in the morning, and it just looks like she's still sleeping. And then there's the obese dude whose cats have been eating his feet.
Yeah,
you know, and it's there's a very wide range of having to deal with dead people. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
I don't like dead people. You were not agreeing when it came to open caskets.
No, I'll make my partner walk into a house first. I'm like, hey, you good? You could walk in. Tell me if it smells. If it doesn't smell, come in. If it does, I'm fuck you. I'll be out here. He's what? I'm like, no.
My partner and I had a deal where I took all the patients that smelled like cigarettes, and he took all the patients that smelled like poop. I think I got the better end of the deal.
He might have said that he got the better end of the deal, depending on how much he hated cigarettes. So when it comes to funeral homes, when you're actually in the morgue lab embalming area, you know, wherever the metal table is, there is a chemical or combination of chemicals that smells a certain way. And it's not just formaldehyde, right? It's there's something in it, and I think it might be a combination of the cleaner they use and the formaldehyde. I'm not sure, but
very familiar with it. I was on funeral detail when I was in the Army for 6 months.
You know the smell I'm talking about? It's a weird, it's not dirty, it's not gross, but it's definitely not pleasant. And if I smelled it again, I would know it, because it almost smells like somebody tried to make it not smell nasty, but failed. So now it smells like really shitty air freshener. It's just the weirdest smell. I remember smelling it on a ride along, and then every other funeral home / morgue I've been in, same smell.
What fucking ride along were you doing? You trying to be a coroner or something?
No, I went on a ride along with a sheriff's department in on the Central Coast of California. And a lot of other sheriff's departments, all of the deputies are coroners.
What? That's crazy. Yeah,
so our sheriff's department where I worked, and in Santa Barbara County as well, every single deputy sheriff goes to death investigation school after they get out of the academy. And they are not only a sheriff, they're also a coroner.
That's actually however, really helpful.
Yeah, it's super helpful. So anytime you had a DB or, 1144 or whatever you guys called them, you could call the sheriff's department, and any deputy could come out and then handle the coroner duties. And then only if the deputy felt like there was an issue, the deputy would call the ME, and the ME was, a contract guy. So if the ME got called, it was basically the coroner said, okay, give me detectives, give me somebody from detectives in homicide, and then give me the ME, and they're going to take this over from here, because it's not something I can, I've already established it's not a case that I can handle as a coroner. But it was super helpful, because you'd show up, then the deputy'd show up, half hour, 45 minutes later. And then once he did his thing, within an hour, they had the local funeral home came and picked up the body, and you were out. You didn't even have to wait till the funeral home got there. Once the deputy got there, if he was cool, you'd be like, all right, I'm out. I took my photos.
That sounds extraordinarily proficient, and it doesn't tie down a unit.
Yeah, it was pretty efficient. And I was like you, Chuck, I had the same reaction, because I grew up in a place where there was the coroner's office, and you had actual coroners. But every sheriff's deputy is, in fact, a coroner, and the sheriff is the coroner of the county.
I could see that working if your county isn't busy. But I could see that also calling in guys off duty who for like overtime, like, hey, you're going to be on overtime gig
just for
this day, mm-hmm. Just wait for a call out. So don't drink, don't do anything, stay local. So that way it doesn't tie down a patrol deputy.
Patrol unit.
Mm-hmm. I got to tell you, waiting for a fucking county coroner to come and deal with your shit can take, like James said, 18 hours. Luckily I haven't had to deal with 18 hours, because I would just leave and I'd tell you, is someone else gonna come take this shit over? But like, I've been there for 10, easy 10, I wait the fuck outside. Like, so here's the thing. I can do death pretty well. I can do gunshot victims, whatever. Death inside of a house where it smells, no. Death in the open where it smells, okay. I mean, and I've dealt with some pretty nasty shit. Like, you look at that and you're like, the fuck.
But it's being trapped in the room with the smell that gets,
exactly. It's that condensed fucking smell that hits you in your eyes, and you're just like, holy shit. Mm-hmm. And I gotta tell you, I've been in some houses, the person's not even fucking dead, and I get hit with that smell.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
Bugs in my eyes and shit going into my mouth. Like, no. Like fucking dry heaving at the front door or inside of an apartment complex, like damn, you're about to puke all over the floor. And I don't give a fuck. I'll do it. I don't care. But it's that bad.
It's such a rancid, horrid smell. There, you could be a mile away from it and be like, ooh.
Yeah. And I can tell you that we've talked about this many, many times on the show. You will never unsmell it, and you'll never forget it once you've smelled it. But I can't describe it, and even animal carcasses don't Because humans produce just a lot more, just different stuff. I have yet, and who knows, maybe I'll one day be around an animal carcass and I'll be like, oh, that's exactly what it smells like. But it's still the smell of death, but it's not quite that same smell.
People are different.
People are so much more pungent.
Yeah. Not only that, but, and I know I've said this too, but they look different. When life is gone, this is, I mean, I believe everybody has a soul. I believe that's where consciousness comes from. But what I kind of look at as anecdotal evidence of that is when you look at a dead body, like they don't look the same. They don't like before you even check the pulse, it's, you know, lifeless. It looks waxy. It looks, and you could say, well, it's because of the circulation. It's not, you know, this and anything, but I'm gonna tell you, right, I've seen pretty fresh bodies where they haven't changed color yet. And you can tell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The worst is, the two worst, I think, is one when they mummify and their like skin is getting all dried out and pulling over their fucking teeth. And you're just like, that looks bad. That looks like a skeleton, and their skeleton's trying to come through their skin.
Or waterlogged.
I haven't dealt with any waterlogged, so that's I can't speak on it. Yeah. But when they're face down, the lividity set in. And all that blood and shit is on one side of the
like
body,
and you swollen purple sausage ready to pop.
And you go to roll them over, and you're like, nope,
no,
yeah. Nope, the worst I'm not is doing when it. They, hey man, go through their pockets and get their ID. Like, and their pockets are all cold.
And there's if you touch their skin, it's like touching a chicken cutlet in the deli section.
You're like trying to pull the wallet out, was like getting any contact. You're like, fuck, come on.
So great thing is that cops don't have to do that because we're not allowed to go in the pockets. I did, however, have one corner was like, hey, you're a boot, right? And I was like, yes, sir. Yes, and he's sir. Like, hey, I need you to take this thermometer. And a liver punch.
Oh,
this old dead abuela, like this old Hispanic grandma. And I was like, no. He's like, what? And I said, no.
No.
He goes, you can't fucking tell me no. I said, I just did. What are you talking about? And he goes,
hey, number one, I don't work for you.
Yeah. So he's like, you're a boot. You're a probationer. You have to. And I said, listen, bud. I'm a cop. I may be a boot. I may be brand fucking new, but I ain't your boot. First of all, do your fucking job and punch that lady's fucking liver. I'm going to step outside while you do it because that ain't my shit. That's not my job. I'm not doing it. You do your job. I'll do mine. I ain't doing it. I looked at this little old lady. I'm like, dude, she is like the kindest face. Like she had just passed. Like, and it was old age. She was, you know, and her whole family is there. I was like, fuck you, dude. No. Find someone else to do it. And the funny thing was, is that I ended up having to, my training officer wasn't there for the day. So I was rolling with a supervisor, and the supervisor were both Marines, and he laughed at me, walked out. And I was like, all right, I'll see you when you're done. And I walked outside. He laughed and he had nothing to say. I mean, was he going to tell me it's not my job?
So the funniest thing about that is I was just thinking the same thing. I was thinking about what my response would have been as an FTO. And if I'd had my trainee, and I would have probably gone two things. One, good job. Two, next time tell me first so I can chew that asshole out for ordering my boot to do any fucking thing he thinks he can.
Yeah, it's yours. No, fuck that.
You're my boot, not his. He exactly. Not only did he overstep his bounds with you, that motherfucker overstepped his bounds with me.
Yeah. And dude,
if he looks at me and says, hey, can you have your boot liver punch the dead body? I'd be like, boot liver punch the dead body. That's fine. But don't you fucking go around me.
And that's got to be out of some kind of scope of practice for coroners as well. Like, I guarantee you, because they work in LA, they had to go through some little fucking fuck class to be able to do that.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not. The coroner, it's. That's a whole different animal. Like, I don't know what they can get away with, because technically, who's going to sue them? Right? They can't.
Yeah. They're not going to get sued by the dead person.
They're not violating their Fourth Amendment rights. They're not like, they're fucking dead. Like,
it's medical. What's somebody going to
say? That liver thermometer wasn't sterilized properly. How do you know he's been trained on it? What am I going to do? Fucking kill him again? He's dead. So,
dude, anyway. I'll never forget that sound of that punch, dude. It was like a big pop. Like, I can't do it with my lips, right? But it was like you put your finger in the side.
Kind
of
like when
you
pop a zit and you can hear it.
Except louder.
You know, take your finger,
put it in your mouth, and then really pop that shit out.
Yeah. What it sounded like. Well, James, I appreciate you, brother. And do you have anyone you want to dedicate this episode to? We always want to give you guys the chance, but if you don't, we can take care of it.
So I don't know the officer's name or the fire off the
LA County firefighter.
Yeah, the LA County firefighter that got killed by a coworker. I don't know the situation, but my buddy walked his daughter down graduation, and I just want to give a shout out to him and say that the whole community is behind them and their family, and it's absolutely heartbreaking that whatever it was that caused that tension between them, for a brother to betray a brother in that way is completely heartbreaking, especially since he had a daughter that was just about to graduate high school.
Right.
And for those of you who do not know this firefighter's name, it is Tori Carlin.
Yeah. And so I wanted to also bring up a caper that was, I mentored a young lady who she went on to work at the San Diego Police Department. And I saw this and I was a little bit sickened by it because of the enormity of how messed up this is. It's Detective Ryan Park and Detective Jamie Huntley Park. And if their names sound similar, it's because they are married and they were killed in the same incident because they were working. It's basically Detective Ryan Park and his wife, Detective Jamie Huntley Park, were killed when their department vehicle was struck head on by a wrong way driver on I-5 near Route 905 in San Ysidro. They were conducting follow-up investigations when the crash occurred at about 10:25 a.m. The driver of the vehicle that collided with them was also killed. They were male and female that met in the academy and then got married once they got hired on the job, and they were both killed in the same crash. So we take it, rest easy, brother and sister. We've got it from here. James, did you have anything you wanted to say on our closing? All right, brother. We always love having you on. You always,
that's all for me.
Pain, as I like to say. Chuck, how about you?
Yeah. So if you guys, are looking to book a slot on this show, please email booking.warstories.com or net.com. Sorry, booking.warstories@gmail. Also, you can connect with me or Tom on the Instagram. I'm pretty active on the Instagram, so you can DM me there. So go follow us on War Stories Official on Instagram and DM me there if you can't remember the email, or it's booking.warstories@gmail. I will answer. If you guys have already emailed me or emailed the email but haven't heard back, please send a follow-up email. I have a bunch of emails to go through. I have been reaching out to some of you guys, and you guys haven't been responding. So please, if you're listening, check your email because your email. I have responded. And then if you're just wondering if I haven't got back out to you, or maybe you think I have, but you haven't seen it, just email me again and we'll connect. And I would love to get you guys all on. So work with me, I'll work with you. Please email me again, or just re-email the same thread and then connect with me on Instagram, as well as Tom. And then we have a few things coming down the pipe. You guys saw the t-shirts that we've been working on. Those are coming down. You guys voted. I think we'll probably go with the one that you voted on, since it's popular opinion. The second one, that those tank tops will be coming out, and the back to that tank top. And there was like five of you that decided to just vote no. Well, un-American in my opinion, but whatever. Anyways, we're going to be making those into a sticker. I am personally going to be making those into a sticker. I have a die cut vinyl vendor I'm going to be using. So those will be available. So please check out. You will see it first on Instagram. So if you're not following, create an Instagram account or go follow us. All right.
All right. Well, I think other than catching people up on the t-shirts and all that kind of stuff, we're revamping the website. You know, I've added Chuck on there. We're going to get some new photos taken. We've got our new logo up there that one of our listeners made for us. We're just going to be, this is the year to start adding some stuff on there since we were kind of screwed by the quarantine lockdown shit last year. So more t-shirts to come. Chuck and I have been working on a kind of a funny one that I'm going to test on TeePublic because I haven't updated any new designs there. And until our next episode, come home with your shield or on it.